WNST Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is a fun week, a fun time for me. Everybody knows I love the holidays and the Mariah Carey song and singing some Bing and some Elvis and all that. But we're going to be dancing a little bit this week, a little special. It's 30th anniversary on radio. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be letting ourselves play over at Costas with some crab cakes, the Crab Cake Tour, bringing out lots and lots of old friends. I have been tracking down prospects, suspects, people that have been involved in my life in some way. Some of them have decided to come on. I'm still chasing my kindergarten teacher around down in Yulee, Florida. This guy comes at it honest. I don't think he's been a guest on my show anytime in the modern era. Maybe back when I had short hair and I was Nasty Nestor, now that I have long hair and I'm Baltimore Positive. But this is one of my great mentors, a guy I read as a youthful, exuberant lad, then became a colleague of mine at Sports First and the News American. January of 1984, the first night that I was in the office down at the Baltimore News American at South and Lombard Streets that I walked by, that's now an empty lot. There's a Shake Shack across the street that used to be Zingaro's, Mark Hyman. Mark Hyman covered baseball, covered the Orioles, covered the 83 Orioles, did a lot of cool stuff. But I read his work, and I remember being in, literally in the newsroom the first night I was there, and you were sitting outside the newsroom, and I'm like, that's Mark Hyman. And Bill Stecker was nearby, and he wanted me to be impressed by him as well, and I saw him at the Hippodrome recently. Mark, I love you. I've known you 37 years, and to have you as a guest on my show and extol the virtues of journalism and baseball and newspapering, how are you, man? I love you, and I miss you. How's life?
So when you say you're having old friends on the show, I know that you are referring to me, because I mean, we've known each other almost 40 years. I think you were 5 when we met.
I was 15 that night. I was 15 the night you met me. Yeah, seriously, I was 15. I had just turned 15, and the Colts were still in Baltimore when you met me, right? Yeah. So it was January of 84. You were about to spring training away, and it might have been serendipity that you were sitting there. But, like, all the names in the paper, you know, meant something to me, whether it was Kathy Frazier or Molly Dunham or, you know, name anyone, right? Susan Reimer was around it. Like, all these people that were a part of this. And we had a reunion a couple of months ago. And I guess this is where I'm going to out this. And I've had Barry Levine on in the last couple of months, chasing Ghislaine Maxwell into trial and Donald Trump and all of that. It's an amazing, amazing gift to me that I found you and that I found all of these people like Scott LaBar in that newsroom that said, hey, Steven Tyler's going to be calling from Aerosmith, kid. Do you want to take the phone call, right? Like, crazy things that happen. But the News American's its own crazy place, and I have no idea how you wound up there, Mark Hyman.
Well, I can tell you. So that the News American was really a turning point in my career. I guess I was in my mid-20s at that point. I'd been working at the Dallas Times-Herald covering Southern Methodist University football.
And no scandal there.
Exciting time. Because the year that I covered the team for 1 year. They were co-national champions, and they were about to descend into the most fantastic scandal in the history of NCAA football. That I played a small role in creating. But I was living in Dallas and was eager to get back to the East Coast and looking for an opportunity to cover baseball. And the News American, you know, was kind of a struggling, but, very talented group of young reporters there. I got an opportunity to cover the Orioles in 83. I arrived in July of 83. And
there was like a weird Philadelphia pipeline, right? With Philadelphia and Baltimore and the sports departments and the Peter Pascarellis and the Jack Gibbons and Mike Marlowe and a lot of different people sort of float. Ken Rosenthal kind of came in the side door in that way. Philadelphia and Baltimore, right? And Temple, right? And John Eisenberg and and Andrea Kramer sat in same classes with him. That Maryland and Philadelphia has been a journalism hub, and I know you have a lot with Merrill, and we'll get into that, but this has been very fertile soil to grow with little Nasty Nesters, right?
Yeah, and I, probably most people don't know this, but John Eisenberg and I were college classmates at Penn in Philadelphia. And Kenny Rosenthal also went to Penn. He was behind us by 5 or 6 years. But so there's, you know, before we got to Baltimore, there was a community. We knew each other. And, you know, great things. You know, you think about Kenny and John Eisenberg and some all of the great things that happened to us career-wise as a result of having been in the newspaper business in Baltimore.
Mark Hyman is here. You can Google him and find him. And by the way, Room Raiders digging your book rack back there. You know, I don't know if you've read all those or wrote all those. You got some bobbleheads going on.
Yeah.
You know, all I ever wanted to be, and this is my 30th anniversary, was Oscar Madison, right? Like, I literally wanted to be a reporter because I watched Happy Days and Richie Cunningham was a reporter. And being a journalist meant that I get to ask questions and meet exciting, famous people, which has really turned out to be true. A lot of a-holes, too, but nonetheless, a lot of great people. And I've collected this incredible group of wisdom that being a young person and answering phones for and writing score, you know, box scores in the beginning, not even knowing how to type, and having Ron Wenig and Bob Paston and Tom Cousins and these people in my life. And I'm missing a finger, too, which made it interesting in the typing class when I had the white paper and the professor, Mr. Polanis, would put the paper over my fingers. But the keyboard changed my life, right? Like the minute I could backspace on the little green VDTs that made me blind at the News American. But all I wanted to be was Oscar Madison. Where were you? I always thought that you were more Joe Friday, more that, you know, reportorial, more long-form journalism, more writing books on scandal and stuff like that, that would outing truths, right? Like truth-seeking, more so than being a baseball beat writer, which seemed like a nice time for you. But you got off of that pretty quickly, and that's all I dreamed of being, was a baseball beat writer all my life. Now I'm thinking, oh my God, if I'd have done that for 10 years, I'd have lost my mind, right? I mean, it's a really difficult thing what we aspired to be. When little Nestor met Mark Hyman and said, I just want to be you and eat crab cakes in Memorial Stadium and go to Fenway Park and stay in a Sheraton and miss my flight from Logan. So like, I loved all of that, but I don't know where you were at that point, because you had my dream job. When Kevin Coward decided to not be a sports writer, I went to Burke's and bought him beer. I'm like, Kevin, you've lost your mind. You're a sports writer. You just came back from the World Series. Don't quit this gig, dude. But that was me being 21, giving a 50-year-old guy advice, you know?
Well, you know, some guys are cut out to be beat guys, and they do it for years and sometimes decades. How about our friend Jim Henneman? You know, he covered the Orioles as a beat guy probably for 40 years. I mean, it's unthinkable to me how he had the stamina to do that.
It's a lifestyle.
It's just crazy, you know, not only stamina, but, you know, the ability to show up every day and know that you're going to say something a little bit different and important about a game. I mean, I did it for 4 years, and that was enough for me. Now, I have to say, I had a little incentive to get out of the beat writing business, because the News American folded while I was covering the Orioles. So it wasn't entirely voluntary on my part. But
you went down with the ship. You were there the last day, May of 86.
No, there's actually a Timmy Kirchen story about this, because we were it was May of 86. And the Orioles were on the West Coast. We were in Seattle, and I was traveling with Timmy, who was then the beat guy for the Morning Sun, and Richard Justice, who was covering for The Washington Post. And we were at the airport in Seattle about to fly to Oakland. And I was at the desk making some change on my ticket, and I feel this very slight tap on the back of my shoulder. And it's Timmy saying, you know what? You really don't have to go to Oakland for that game tonight. Your paper is out of business. So,
well, at least you found that from a credible journalist.
Well, I did. I made a game time decision to fly on to Oakland, because I had my ticket, and Timmy and Richard and I had dinner at a wonderful restaurant in San Francisco called Tadich Grill. And then I flew home, and that was the last time I was an Orioles beat writer. But Timmy was he was there when I learned that the Baltimore News American was no more.
I've had a steak at the Tattitz Grill, man. Good call in San Francisco there, my friend.
Fantastic.
Mark Hyman is here, all things journalism. You know, I don't think of you as a baseball guy. I think of you as a sort of a journalist at this point. Update me on what your life is about. Because, I mean, I ran into you. We all had a sort of a beer down at the Guinness thing, and we're saying hello, and certain people, there was so much awesome going on that I was sort of bouncing around trying to talk to everybody, maybe take a picture, share a memory. But I'm like, I want to have you on the show, man, and, like, tell the whole story so, like, I don't green room it. And Don Mueller would say I don't green room any of my guests. So I caught the thing last month that was going on at Maryland, but I didn't catch all of it. And I'd love to hear, where have you been the last decade?
Yeah, so I've been teaching since 2013 for 7 years at George Washington University in the School of Business. And since July of 2020, I've been the director of the Shirley Povich Center for Sports Journalism at the University of Maryland. And Nestor, this is the dream job. It's absolutely the perfect job for me. And I've enjoyed it so much. So, you know, there are really two parts of the job. There's a public facing side and a student facing side. And the public facing includes things like the symposium that we did last month, celebrating the 50th anniversary of Curt Flood's lawsuit seeking free agency in baseball. We do, in collaboration with the Washington Post, we do a sports and politics poll where we choose topics that touch on sports, but also politics, and take a national sample. Last year, we were, you know, very much in the pandemic, and one of the topics was attendance at live sporting events. So we were asking people, you know, what's your tolerance for going to a baseball game outside or basketball or hockey game in an arena? So that's another example of kind of the public facing side of the job. And then, of course, there's a student facing side, and that's a lot of teaching. And that's, you know, incredibly rewarding. And you know, in that role, I'm teaching and learning from students about issues like Title IX, the business of college sports, name, image, and likeness, teaching, of course, in the spring on the commercialization of youth sports, which is a topic that I've written about a lot. I've written a couple of books about that.
Sounds like my radio show.
Sounds like my radio show.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm interested in the Ravens and the Orioles. And, you know, if Mark Andrews, did he have 2 feet in bounds? That's interesting to me. But the thing that really motivates me and energizes me are these issues that you know, touch sports in a profound way and that affect people's lives. So that's how I've kind of, you know, chosen a path in sports journalism. I've kind of left the game coverage aspect behind, and I really enjoy learning about and talking to people about the issues that are important in sports.
I agree. Mark Hyman is here. He's been a longtime friend in the journalism space, and obviously Professor Hyman, as I should say. So we are going to class today, as we do with Marty Conway and others. I want to ask you about this because me being a person who's had access, who's had a press credential, who's written a couple of books on the football team and championships, and also did a pretty deep dive on Peter Angelos called The Peter Principles in regard to, you know, this reign of error and terror over the last 3 decades and the mass and money and all that gets shifted into that, that I do have pushback from people saying, well, just keep it all positive, keep it all happy, happy, happy. And I'm like, no. We had our football team taken away. And that was my indoctrination to all of this, that I met Mark Hyman with little Nestor when I'm 15, and 2 months later, we don't have a football team anymore. And for the next 12 years, Herb Belgrad serving crab cakes, and we're trying to figure out eminent domain and public financing, and Jack Kent Cook trying to move a team to Laurel, and all of that was my indoctrination, standing next to the David Simons and the Rafael Alvarezes and the news reporters and the blood and guts wire stuff that was going on in the city in the same newsroom 50 feet away for 6 years at midnight from the time I was 17 till I was 23. in that space, there's a part of me that has a real FU pushback on anything that impedes journalism, the murdering of Jamal Khashoggi, the things that are going on, and the having this creep around the country call people who report enemies of the people, and where the scene, the museum closed down, right? For me, with journalism and being trained by people like you and having it be foundational to who I am, to ask who, what, where, why, and then saying, is that bullshit? And tell me, prove to me that that's true. That being taught that early on has benefited me, but boy, I don't know how to tell that to an 18, 19 year old student at this point, where this thing and phones and newspapers are literally Fred Flintstone, right? Like, break it over your knee, right? Like, that's where we are. And we're in this Jetsons world for journalism, but seeing the NFL take my access away at this point, where players are out signing autographs and bowling on Friday night, and we have no access to go to Mark Andrews or Lamar Jackson or anyone and ask a question anymore, I really question whether sports journalism is ever going to exist again in any way that you, me, Tim Kirkchin, and Richard Justice would recognize it, because I think they're going to take the access away and it's just over. I think I've met my last football quarterback in any circumstance that feels like what I remember the last three decades.
Yeah, I mean, Nestor, it's an understatement to say things have changed since the days that we were together at the News American. I mean, two manifestations of that come to mind. One, of course, is social media. And, you know, in the 80s, when I was covering the Orioles, if Cal Ripken wanted to speak to fans of the Orioles, basically he was coming through the News American and the Sun. Those were really the only ways for him to communicate with fans of the team. Obviously, that's changed dramatically. And because of social media, in part, the players can communicate directly, and they don't need media in the way that they did, you know, 30 years ago. So that's a big change. Another thing that I think is not really fully appreciated is, you know, all the leagues and the teams, they have their own content creation platforms. So, you know, in some way,
it's state run at that point. It really is. And it's becoming ubiquitous, and it's becoming washed together as to who's on the payroll and who's not. And it's very troublesome. You know, it's very, very troublesome to me.
Well, that, you know, it's market driven. People clearly are going to team websites and, you know, the NFL.coms and, you know, NFL Network. And so, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's fine for the NFL to have its own, you know, content creation, kind of corner of the world. But I think you need to be transparent about that. And you need to understand that as a consumer. If you're a fan, you need to understand that if you're consuming NFL.com or one of the team websites, you're getting a point of view that is heavily influenced by the people who are funding it. You know, I'd much rather read The Athletic or The New York Times or The Washington Post. That's just me. I'm not down on people who are writing for those publications or who are reading them, but understand that it's different. It's not journalism in the way that I think about journalism. It's content creation. There's a difference.
Well, Mark Hyman is our guest, by the way, University of Maryland and George Washington and the News American and Sports First. I think you had a few bylines there. And, of course, a long time at the Baltimore Sun and my colleague many, many years ago, now teaching about journalism. Mark, I got a picture of me, and I've told this story privately, so I'm going to tell it publicly. I don't think I've told it before because it's a little saucy, and I'll have a go at it. And it's not really inside poker, but it's important. 1997, I've unearthed these pictures that I put up on my Facebook of me having a good time. I actually have a picture of me in the post game, and Ted Marchibroda was the coach, and he must have been standing on a milk crate at Jack Murphy Stadium to get up above other reporters, but Vito's in the picture, and Bruce Cunningham, and a billion people that covered football in Baltimore in 1997. So we're going back 24 years, right? a gaggle would be the journalism word for what this was, but a huge gaggle. I mean, 40 reporters, all Baltimore people, four cameras, 45, 2, 11, 13 are there. Sun's got two beat guys, two sidebars, two columnists. The Washington Post probably had Ken Denlinger or somebody was covering, whatever it is, right? There were reporters there, even some San Diego people, AP, UPI, whatever. 40 people. A couple years ago, and this is before the plague, the year the Ravens were really good, they went out to L.A. and played at Memorial Coliseum, where a facility I had never been to, and I love collecting them. So I went out there. They wore the purple uniforms, and they beat the snot out of the Rams, ran around looking like mustard, and just got steamrolled. And after that game, I went downstairs, and there were four reporters from Baltimore there. Four. Me, Jameson, Jonas, and Zrebeck, I think, were the four. And we go down, and there's no media area. It's the Memorial Coliseum was built 100 years ago. There's like a tent. And Harbaugh walks in the tent, and the only one sitting there is Sam Farmer. The game was 51-6 or whatever, and I'm thinking to myself, we're about to have a press conference live back to Baltimore where there are no reporters other than one L.A. reporter who feels like, I better start asking some questions or there's no press conference anymore, right? So that was 3 years ago. Now, there are four reporters. This year, to start this season after the plague, and I went to Houston last year and sat alone. Jonas and I were the only reporters there in an empty plague-like facility in the middle of a tropical storm. That was last year. But this year, I go to the first game in Vegas, and I get to press row, and I'm there on the top of the world in Vegas, and there's Al Davis and his fake torch, and it's so awful that it deserves to be in Vegas. And they've stolen the Raiders, and I know how good that feels when you steal a football team. Jameson is next to me, and Jeff Zrebeck's next to him. And there's three of us, three people, and I'm there by choice. I'm there because I dig Vegas, and, you know, I don't have to be there. Neither do they at this point, right? Like, there's no mandate. There's no deadline. There's no newspaper. There's no Bob Paston smoking cigarettes in the back room saying, where's the copy? Tell Hensley to get this to me. There's none of that going on. It's just like, it's football game, right? Game ends. They don't know how to work the elevators. Jameson and I get trapped on the roof. Harbaugh does a press conference for two human beings. And Chad Steele just allows this. Jameson and I walk in as the press conference is over on a and I'm thinking to myself, why? What's the charade? Wait, this is a charade that people in Baltimore think this is a press conference, and it's John in the room with a coworker or two, and maybe if Jameson and I can get off the elevator in time, we get to ask a few questions. I mean, this thing is really, this is the National Football League. This thing is really devolved. I mean, devolved to a point where the Zoom world and the locker rooms being closed, it was at that moment where I'm like, I flew through Albuquerque. I spent 3 days here to ask the coach a question after the game. And the truth is, you're not happy to see us, and you don't want us here, and you're never going to let us back in the locker room if this is where we are. If this is what the media now is Jeff Zrebeck waiting for Jameson and I to get down and two questions for the coach. The press conference was a minute and 28 seconds after they lost the home opener in Vegas.
Sounds like we need to get you down here for a guest lecture, Nestor. That's
what. Well, this is what's really going on. This is what's really going on with the Baltimore Ravens and the National Football League in 2021. And this is why if my kid wanted to go to journalism school, I have to say, there might not be a journalism if people like you and I don't save it.
Well, I'm pretty optimistic. I mean, there's so many opportunities now to have a voice and to, you know, create your own space in sports journalism. It's changed dramatically for sure. But, you know, are there fewer people interested in sports than there were 30 years ago? Are there fewer people consuming news about sports than there was 30 years ago? I don't think so. I think if anything, sports is much more central to our lives, and the demand for reliable, you know, news with integrity and honesty, it's greater than ever. So, you know, our kid, I'm so proud of our kids. You know, most of them get great jobs. I think they get pretty good grounding here. So I'm bullish about the future of journalism. and specifically sports journalism, you know, I think it's going to evolve. And you've got to be very nimble. You've got to have a much broader set of skills. You got to be able to use a camera. You know, you got to be able to, you know, you need to understand social media. You need to understand what it means to build a personal brand. But, you know, people interested in writing about sports and, you know, communicating about sports, you know, that's not going away. Now, having said that, I got to get back to my day job. So,
oh, well, go get back to your day job. You got to go teach. Mark Hyman, tell everybody how to find you and find your next thing, symposiums and all that good stuff.
PovichCenter.org is our website. And at PovichCenter is our Twitter handle. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on down here from, you know, for the public to enjoy and access. So I encourage people to come to our website and check it out.
I encourage sports people and sports reporters to stick together, right? I mean, you know, like to some degree, there's going to need to be a little pushback. You mentioned Kurt Flood. It's pretty obvious what they'll do if you'll let them do it. Mark, I appreciate you, man. I love you all these years. Anytime you need me, I'm here. Crab cakes for you, my friend. There he goes. Mark Hyman joining us here and speaking some truths about truth and about journalism. And it's always good to do that with reporters around here. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, celebrating 30 years. Sometimes excellence. Sometimes we just complain. Sometimes we change the world. We are BaltimorePositive.com.